let's get to that slide, and hopefully that'll be apparent. This is what I'm saying here, and what I was thinking of as I was talking with you. Our coverage is about 22-fold, almost 23-fold, rounding up. And if you look at the areas of the genome, and this is empirically, we've got about 85% of the genome that has greater than 10x reads, whereas with the lower coverage studies, you know, they can map, they can cover most of the genome. In fact, even with 2x coverage, you're not even covering most of the genome. You're covering it randomly. And on top of that, where you do cover it, you don't have the read depth to call heterozygosity or really have very high confidence in those SNPs. This is just showing the numbers of accessions that we've sequenced. We focus mainly on the two domesticated species of cotton, of course, resulting in about 650 accessions. And again, highlighting what Don's question was prompted was that we downloaded many of, not just our data, but also all publicly available accessions at the time of when we were beginning our analysis. And there were roughly 1,400 lines available. Many of these did not have the coverage, so this is the amount of missing. And anywhere, this is 25% missing data after SNP calling, right? So we threw away all these lines because we wanted to be very certain about the lines that we're analyzing for phylogenies and different things. And we ended up with a final set of 1024 lines. And it's highlighted all of these, nearly all of these are recent sequencing efforts here, but we weren't perfect. You know, some of them have about, that's a 5% error rate here, or missing rate, and here's a 10%. And this is, again, after SNP calling. When we looked at SNPs just in general, the takeaway of this slide is, first of all, that we found, this is this number up here says 92%, 91.84. A lot of SNPs were counted, and these are the genic ones. And if we take the coding region ones, then these are about 1 or 1.5% in the coding regions. These are introns, and these are where's the genic? The genic are this whole thing I guess we'd consider as genic, being upstream, downstream, UTRs, promoters, and coding region. But then we found more SNPs in the A genome. This is the A genome, and this is the D genome. We found more SNPs in the AT genome than the DT genome. But of the DT genome, more of those were present in coding regions. About 6% were in the genic regions, whereas the AT genome had about 3% in coding regions. This is looking in at this a little closer, but similar charts for 81 and 82 when we're splitting out these two species. And in this case, 81 had more SNPs detected overall, but also more in the coding regions compared to 82. So when we look at the PCA plot, this is a measure of genetic diversity. And this is everything together. It's very easy to categorize 81, which is in this green lopsided box right here, and from 82, which is this set of material. But it's very hard to distinguish between wild forms of 82, which the cultivated are purple, or this purple, and there are some up here, and these are the wild forms. Whereas 81, the cultivated are the light blue, and then this trail of different accessions is on the principal component axis number 2 right here. This is the diversity within 81. 87 and 86, which are recently described tetraploid species, very closely related to 81, are embedded in different parts of this. Here's an 87 that's right there. So just for reference of where those others are falling. When we looked at, and the thing I want you to get out of here is that basically this in this phylogenetic tree, it's showing that 81 and 82 are independent domestication events. And we know this because this is 82 over here, part of the clade, and this is 83 or tomentosum right here. This is the Hawaiian accession or species. And then all of these are 81, which is, you know, of course, Gossypium hirsutum, or this being the wilds and then these being the domesticated. We also detected indels, and indels had a very similar story of as SNPs. There's a higher ratio in the gene region of DT than in AT, just like we saw with the SNPs. But overall, I mean, that's the ratio, but overall there were more detected in the AT than there were in the DT genome. In the gene regions, there were more indels in the DT genome. The length of the indels was anywhere, you know, centered around one, but this is somewhat dependent on also the technology we use to detect the indels, but the software is really good at detecting anything less than 9, but I'll leave it at that. When we look at the 81 in particular, Gossypium hirsutum, we find that there are 4 different groups, and I'll show this more dramatically in the next slide. I want to point out here's 84, this is Mustelinum, which roots this tree. The wilds come out all very cleanly clustered together. This is wild hirsutums from the Yucatan Peninsula and others, not just there, but they group in a loose group here in the bottom part of this V, if you will, of the plot. Then we have Landrace 1, which in Landrace 2, and it appears that all of the cultivars seem to have come out of the stock of Landrace 2. And to further describe what I mean by Landrace 1 and 2, when we look at the structure plots of these, we calculated the K of structure and found that K4 actually has the highest delta, meaning that when you calculate these structure plots, you do it with different set of mean. K is equal to a different number or a mean, and they and it essentially classifies it in the number that you tell it to. But you can there's a statistic you can tell that distinguishes between each one, and it appears that K4 is the one that is the most explains most of the variation the variation best in our data set. And again, here's the wild, and you can see, and then it color codes them. The cultivars, there is a limited amount of genetic diversity. Again, this is relative, though, to the wild Landrace 1 and 2. Landrace 2 has this mixture of some wilds and some of its novel alleles in its own. But this also is somewhat predictive because, this is the model that we've come up with, is that the wild contained all the alleles of the germplasm pool, and Landrace 1 separated out from that. Landrace 2 had all the alleles necessary for the cultivar development, and where most of the cultivars were selected from. So if to put that in a domestication story, you know, the center of origin, and I'm showing the Yucatan here with this circle, but it's a fuzzy circle. I mean, there's regions around there where the different wild accessions came from, but it spread from the Yucatan Peninsula to simplify the story to the southern part of Central America, and then from there it separated into Landrace 2 and Landrace 1, and this Landrace 1 is on this rim of the Caribbean. From Landrace 2, it was taken and used in modern breeding in the U.S. And after U.S. Domestication or modern domestication, so there's one domestication event from the wild to the Landrace, and then from Landrace 2, and then China and others have adopted the U.S. germplasm and pulled it to their production areas. This is highlighting the amount of nucleotide diversity that was lost. And here I'm highlighting this is all relative to cultivar. The idea being that landrace 1 and 2 lost different amount or different portions of that genetic diversity. The largest number here is just highlighted in bar form here is this landrace to cultivar. So that's where we lost the most of the genetic diversity. If we look at 82 in a similar story, we're going to walk through this a little bit. And we did come up with a very similar story when doing the... skipping ahead here to the k-means or the cluster analysis. 4 is also the most tenable amounts of germplasm pools inside of this data set. There's a significant amount of, here's the wild alleles. Landrace 1 is a mixture. Landrace 2 mostly is composed of this particular tan, and the cultivar again is green with different amounts of crossing. It's likely that any of these guys here that are cultivars likely have a recent history of crossing with wild and some wild integration in a handful of the lines. But one thing that is interesting when you look at these phylogenetic trees of different species is that they are very consistent in how they are placed. So when you look at the different wilds, they're all coming from the same geographic regions, and in this particular case, there's the tangues from Peru of 82 that comes out as a single population, suggesting that these were somewhat isolated over time from the remainder of this landrace 1 and this domestication event. It's a little more complicated story with Gossypium barbadense, and we have a hard time distinguishing what exactly is wild versus land races in barbadense, and it's much more of this phylogeny puts it on in somewhat a clear way, but in reality where you draw these lines can be somewhat arbitrary or color these trees, and we put all this as wild, but it seems that the domestication story started from South America. There's two pools, one going to the Caribbean and the other or to the Southern Caribbean, other going to the Northern Caribbean. This was taken from from the Northern Caribbean and planted in the Sea Islands here. From the Sea Islands, it was taken to Egypt and also to Arizona. Now we've got essentially most of it in the Pima cultivars that were developed in the western U.S. And you can see that also how that plays out in the phylogeny here, that the Pima cottons are at this tail end and they're generally all clustered here. The Egyptian cottons are here in this little clade. The Sea Island cottons are along this comb here, and then you get into these land races from different collections, but again, it gets somewhat fuzzy as you go up the phylogeny tree. The point of this slide here is to show that if you remember, probably not, but the pie that was or the genetic diversity that was lost in Gossypium hirsutum was in most of those were in the 2 range, and these are mostly in the 1 range. And so the point here is that we've lost about half as much genetic diversity, you might say. On the other hand, there is a significantly less genetic diversity to begin with that exists in the wilds and in the land races. So this is just a ratio. We have looked at selective sweeps. I'm not going to talk about them in particular right now, but we're using this XPCLR software and XPEHH. After I've presented this, the natural history of cotton and how it's followed these domestication patterns or these geographies, it isn't as simple as all that. And one way we've discovered or been looking at that a little more closely at at a fine scale resolution in the genome is looking at SNPs that that would be indicative of germplasm integration. These lines up here are wild. These lines down here are, these lines up here are wild hirsutum. These lines down here are wild barbadense. So assuming that these two represent the ancestral state, you might say, of those different species, we called SNPs, and again, filtering out minor allele frequencies and different things, but we called SNPs and just and ones that we weren't careful or confident in, we just threw away. And we had about 6 million SNPs where we felt very confident we could distinguish between those two types. And this is just showing how I selected those accessions from the phylogenetic tree. Again, this is just a different display of the overall tree, barbadense over here and hirsutum here. Again, zooming in on that, when we look at the overall genome, the chromosomes are displayed across the x-axis. You can see that there are regions of the genome that are, and these are just, you know, as you scroll through here, there's hundreds of accessions that we've sequenced and analyzed here, but in general, all the cultivars have this very similar pattern, suggesting that nearly all the cultivars, not all, but nearly all of them have these signatures of barbadense that are within their genomes to a lesser or greater extent. The biggest one was on this AD6, which is right here, chromosome 6, A6, sorry. And zooming in on that, that's about 2.5 megabases that are present in most of our current cultivars of Gossypium hirsutum. This is a piece, essentially, of Gossypium barbadense that has been integrated into the genome. Nearly all of them have it. Some of them have had some recombination to shorten that region to make it a little smaller. But most of the cultivars have this. These are checks of Gossypium barbadense where we can see the SNPs across the chromosome 6. So these definitely look like barbadense when I run the detection and software for barbadense alleles, and this is where we pick it up in Gossypium hirsutum, but not in other regions. So we have this, but it's scattered across the genome. And so where I'm going to end with today is greater genetic diversity of Gossypium hirsutum was found compared to Gossypium barbadense. AT was larger than DT, but DT had a larger percentage in the genic regions. In general, the phylogenetic history, it's reassuring that that what we're finding in our SNP data traces the industrialization and utilization by humans in this domestication happened as it left the centers of origin, but yet we can also follow some of this, trace some of the history going between continents in modern history. And finally, integration happened either through early domestication, such that nearly all GH cultivars have GB alleles in some regions, and there's not a whole lot, but there seem to be some, and this could be indicative of early early crosses as hirsutum cultivars were adapted to the North America, or selection of certain regions were selected during adaptation of new environments. So finally, I wanted to bring this up and talk to you about where I think that our future is going. We've got 2 minutes, it says. Oh, we lost some time. All right. Well, I've got 2 slides, and it will be very short. And this one will hopefully make you smile. And that there is an actual thing called the Gardner hype cycle. And I think particularly new technologies go through this cycle where we've got this technology trigger and this peak of inflated expectations, this trough of disillusionment, and I've been here many times, and a slope of enlightenment and a plateau of productivity. This was pointed out to me about a year or so ago regarding some other sequencing technology and sequencing genomes de novo, but I think this also applies to DNA sequencing and genotyping in the sense that, right when everyone learns about GBS, we think, we can sequence everything and really cheaply, and it's going to all be We'll have our rose-colored glasses on here, but then you actually get your data and it's not mapping very well, and and you're in this trough of disillusionment. But I think we're coming out of this trough here, and now we're entering in this plateau of productivity in terms of GBS and sequencing. And I hope that this data set that we've developed, you know, I've presented some things regarding the natural history of cotton and its domestication, but how can that be used in breeding, right? And what does that mean to you? Where we're going with this is that we've adopted this approach thanks to support comments, you might say, by Duke Pauly, who's here, to develop a practical haplotype graph, and this is following in the footsteps of the Buckler Lab, who is doing this in maize, and it creates a database, and I envision this database being on CottonGen, but anyone can download it, and this will include haplotypes based on either gene regions or on just fixed windows across the genome, and it'll have SNPs, and it'll identify haplotypes, and it's all contained within this database. And so the idea is that you will be able to upload a skim sequence, any accessions, and hopefully, you know, you don't even need to do GBS, that this you'll be able to upload your sequencing file to CottonGen, and this practical haplotype graph will reside on CottonGen, and will do the analysis for you, and you can download the haplotypes for genomic selection for your skim sequencing. And if you wanted to do genomic selection on your own computer, or if you want to do genomic selection on CottonGen, you could do it on that. I mean, this is looking forward like 5 years, but or hopefully next year, right? But I don't want to put too short of a time on that, because it has represented some significant amount of work. But a lot of this path has already been made through in the maize community, and I see this as a way to where you'll be able to do quickly use GBS or sequencing technologies for genotyping different lines, whether it be breeding or whatever. You won't need to have the coverage and the resolution, perhaps, that we've developed in this large database. We've based on the sequencing we've done, we'll have a very high resolution of these haplotypes. And by doing this simple skim sequencing, you won't need to identify all three SNPs. You'll just need to know that, well, if a read lands over one, you'll just assume that whole block is coming from one particular haplotype or another. So there's some savings there in terms of identification. And with that, I'll take any questions. If there is time for questions, is there time for questions? Yeah. You know, I don't know. I will say that it did. Looking at this, in fact, A6 that I highlighted, this is generally in the center of the chromosome towards the centromeric region. I'm not going to place this. The centromere essentially in this chromosome, you know, spans from, it's about 15 to 20 megabases, and it's not centered completely on this region, but it is centered. This region is contained within the centromeric region, and so having this, what does that mean? It means that I don't know if it's suppressing recombination, but I do think that it's scattered throughout the genome and not necessarily in only high recombining regions. Does that answer your question? Yeah, the land races are not as clear in the sense that we do see some of those alleles in the land races, but the way we've set up the comparison with the SNPs, if we put wilds in here, they'll end up just being blank, essentially, because that's what we use to define what an integration is. So if we put a wild line in here, and this is a Barbadensi line across, the land races will have some, it looks almost like stochastic error going across. When you zoom in, the regions generally end up falling apart. There are some regions, Ping, that appear to have some integration with land races, but they're small, and when you zoom in on, and they're more varied. We're not finding a region like this that's in all the land races. If we do, it's like one here and one there, and sometimes I don't know how much to believe it, because when you zoom in on that peak seems to disappear, and really it comes down to how stringent you want to filter in the end, because it's more of a continuum, you might say, in a way to identify those.
I remember some of the old paper, Jonathan, I think, is Percy, and also Kirk, I think. There are quite a few populations that have been tested.
Yeah, the story, I mean, if we look at different races of land races of the punctatum and some of these others, we don't see a significant, there isn't a story where there's a single fixed region that goes across those races. It looks just like they were, it looks more like a background kind of noise than it does any strong signal. But when you do zoom in on those, a few of those, you zoom in on them, and they seem to be pretty large, you know, a few of them. There's so many of them in different lines that I haven't chased down individually which ones are, I'd believe, in those land races or not. But there are some, that, and they do exist. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Josh.
Sure.
Please give a round of applause for us.